International trade and the First Coast just ahead. What a fight in Washington means for local business. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, local business leaders sound off on the Washington fight over international trade agreements. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, lymphedema awareness from one local activist. We'll tell you about an important medical update, plus a special haiku event celebrating National Poetry Month is happening this weekend. All of that ahead. But first, this morning, President Obama is facing a bit of a Democratic revolt over ambitious trade initiatives that are dividing his party. The disagreements erupted Wednesday as leaders of the Senate Finance Committee tried to proceed with a vote on trade legislation. Now, today, the House Ways and Means Committee will vote on a fast-track bill that would renew presidential authority to present trade deals that Congress can endorse or reject, but not amend. Obama wants these powers to advance free trade proposals, such as the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership. However, some progressive groups and labor unions say free trade pacts hurt U.S. jobs. This morning, we're taking a closer look at how this fight over trade agreements will impact businesses in our area. On the line, Andrew East, the Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President of Alternate Energy Technologies. That's the largest U.S. manufacturer of solar thermal energy systems, and it's right here in our area. Andrew's on the line now from Green Cove Springs. Andrew, thanks for being on the program.
Melissa, good morning, and thank you for having me.
And we want your calls. What are your thoughts about this international trade agreement situation and your questions? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. So, Andrew, before we get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on with this legislation on Capitol Hill, tell us a little bit about your company and why you have an interest in this.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, AET, Alternate Energy Technologies, is a solar collector manufacturer, and we've been in business operating in North Florida since 1975. So we've had quite a long history in the renewable energy space, and we've seen the sinusoidal wave that really represents the domestic market ride along the shoulders of incentives, really. And when the incentives were removed in 1985, we really saw a tremendous decrease in the domestic market. And so we had to turn to the global marketplace in order to sustain ourselves. And so these type of promotional authorities for free trade agreements are extremely important to us as a manufacturer to be able to withstand a downturn in domestic markets by ensuring that we're able to hedge ourselves with the global market. So we really survived until 2003 by selling into the Caribbean and European markets before the reinvigoration of the domestic solar market in 2003.
And since 2003, how has the domestic solar market grown and expanded?
We've seen tremendous growth in the domestic solar market, about 150% compound annual growth between 2003 and 2008, and it has slowed slightly since 2008 to about a 50% annual growth, but it has been extremely invigorating domestically. But with the 2016 deadline of the ITC, which is the investment tax credit, looming pretty broad and bright now in our windshield, we want to ensure that we're able to diversify our revenue streams again so that we don't witness kind of the collapse of the industry that we did in the 1980s.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment. As lawmakers on Capitol Hill today are scheduled to vote on a fast-track bill changing the way trade deals are done in this country overseas, the number to join us, 549-2937. So, Andrew, as the House Ways and Means Committee prepares to vote on this, this gives more presidential authority, basically, over international trade. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's necessary to give the president the ability to negotiate these deals in good faith, such that our trade partners can understand that any concessions that are made will be lived up to, and those obligations will be mutually satisfied. Whereas if the president has to bring those bills back to Congress and get them to sign off or potentially amend, then it really destroys the power at the negotiating table. So from my business my company's perspective, it's extremely important. We've seen an uptick in business in Colombia after the 2012 free trade agreements were signed, and two of the customers that we picked up specifically said that the reasons were because American products were now more cost-effective for them to purchase than the products that were previously purchasing from Europe. And additionally, there are some extremely heinous for small business barriers to entry in the Asian markets and the European markets, specifically around testing and certification. And so having kind of one set of rules by which we all play will allow small businesses and innovative companies to be able to access those markets and more quickly grow and build jobs domestically.
The president is facing something of a Democratic revolt on this issue. Leading Democrats in the House and Senate say this is job-killing legislation for American workers. What is your reaction to that argument?
My reaction is that we've been able to hire additional workers because of our expansion into overseas markets. And as long as the Trade Promotion Authority and these free trade agreements are kind of balanced with domestic incentives for manufacturers to start, you know, utilizing the asset that America's always been well known for, and that is the greatest workforce in the world. And, you know, American workers produce higher quality, more durable goods than any other society. And I think that you're starting to see that value getting recognized in the global marketplace again. And so as we're starting to, I know the new term is onshore and bring jobs and manufacturing back to the U.S., I really think that you will see a boon of manufacturing jobs created by these free trade agreements, as long as corporations are able to take a longer-term view than just looking at the next quarterly dividend.
Right, because there is growing alarm about the flood of imports to our country from cheap labor overseas. You think this could potentially mitigate that, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And I've started to see in many markets, especially where you've had the Chinese come in, particularly before us, they've created the demand for higher quality goods, and they're looking for the great customer service that American companies can provide, and they're looking for companies that will stand behind their products with warranties and guarantees. And as such, I think that there is a tremendous market, especially internationally, as you start to see the international middle class grow by leaps and bounds. I mean, they're projected to have 3.7 billion middle-class consumers in the Asian and Eastern European markets by 2035. So, you know, with that type of growth and that type of market potential, it would behoove us to ensure that we're able to help establish the rules within those new and emerging markets so that American companies can remain competitive.
And we want your thoughts and comments about this international trade discussion right now at 549-2937. Rick is in Riverside. Hey, Rick, good morning.
Good morning. I can't really say at this point whether I am for or against this this deal. And my biggest concern is that I really can't say if I'm for or against it because I don't know the particulars. I understand part of the arrangement is that nothing that's been agreed upon or has will be disclosed in any kind of detail until it's done. This is, in my opinion, a famous tactic by state, local, and federal politicians of all sorts to create a fait accompli and then present it to the people whom it affects without getting any feedback before the agreement is made on what the particulars are. That, plus I look back at NAFTA, which was supposed to increase American manufacturing and create a boon in jobs and hiring. That never came to pass, and in fact, there was a net loss of manufacturing high-wage jobs as a result of that. Sometimes I get the feeling that the only thing Democrats and Republicans can really agree upon is benefits for the for big business. And right now, that's how I'm looking at this. I'd really like to know some particulars, you know, more than a few months before the vote is due.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Thank you. Andrew East, what about his comments, and what about his reference to NAFTA?
No, absolutely, and I think that the government and the administration, that was one of the questions that I raised as I attended a White House Business Council briefing several weeks ago. It was specifically around what lessons had been learned from some of the other free trade agreements and how they were going to utilize those best practices in forming these new trade agreements. And again, they were not very heavy on specifics, but they did mentioned that they were going to be looking at ways to improve these agreements based on some of the lessons that they learned from NAFTA and some of the others that didn't necessarily lead to the creation of jobs that was promised. So again, the devil is always in the details, so I agree with the caller that we definitely need to see the specifics of the deal before we can understand whether or not it's going to be good for the American economy and the American people, but we need to at least, in my estimation, have that opportunity to give it an up or down vote and see what the particulars are that could potentially impact and improve our domestic economy and our global trade imbalance.
549-2937. Paul is in Jacksonville Beach this morning. Hello, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
And thank you for taking my call. I'm a registered Democrat, and I'm for this free trade agreement. Andrew made some great points about job creation in this country. And if you think about infrastructure, all these products that we make that we could ship overseas, that all takes people to do that, whether it's American trucking, American railroads, American logistics companies that handle those things. So that's one part of the job force that'll get really enhanced. That even happened with NAFTA. Because let's face it, all the auto companies are building in Mexico, and they're growing current infrastructure or bringing new manufacturing online. And that's really to come to the American market for the most part. But, and we can't do anything about that. They've made that decision. That's happening, and it's going to continue to happen in 2015 and 2016. But all those products that have to move, they require us to move them, and I'm in transportation and logistics, and those fields will grow as well as any of the cross-border work that happens in terms of customs and things like that. So I think it's great. I think anytime we stifle trade wherever, it's not a good thing for us. We've got great workers. We've got a great transportation system in the country. It's probably the best in the world in terms of freight transportation. And I think those are the things that we'll certainly benefit from.
And that's Paul in Jacksonville Beach. Thank you, Paul. Andrew East.
Yes, I agree with Paul that those support industries all along the supply chain obviously have a huge boon even when manufacturing potentially moves across the border. But I really think that you're going to start to see a movement towards high-tech manufacturing coming back to the U.S. You know, we've exported a lot of these products into overseas markets where potential labor savings were realized in the near term. But now as those middle classes start to grow and those workers start to demand higher wages and better working conditions, I think you're going to see American manufacturers start to realize that utilizing our domestic workforce, and especially with the rising transportation fuel costs as well, are going to make a much better long-term business decision than the short-term gains that could potentially be realized by moving into a lower-cost labor market.
And Andrew, tell us a little bit more about your manufacturing facility, solar thermal energy systems, your operation in Green Cove Springs, and the logistics of how you export. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So we have a 60,000 square foot manufacturing facility and 20,000 square feet of office space. It is completely sustainable, so we generate all of the energy that we need to run our facility off of a photovoltaic, solar electric system that we have on both the roof of our facility and the roof of our offices. We reuse all of the water, which we capture from our rainwater catchment system for our industrial process, so we don't discharge or consume any municipal water as well. So we're really a completely closed-loop manufacturing facility. And we just moved into this building in 2011. And kind of an interesting side story, we were located in the west side of Jacksonville before, and we were obviously looking at several states and several different cities and areas to contemplate building a new facility. And we decided to stay right here in North Florida specifically because of logistics and the advantages that it provided. Tell an interesting story when I was at Jacksport, and when we were looking at transportation costs and potential transportation costs to our distributors, when I ran the numbers, we found that we were able to ship goods more cost-effectively from Jacksonville to California than from our distributor in Arizona to California. So with those type of logistic advantages in the domestic market, being located right here was a no-brainer. And then with the great access to Jaxport and our ability to hit the Caribbean and Latin American markets very cost-effectively from there, it tremendously helps in terms of our ability to be cost-competitive with competitors coming from Asia or from Europe even. So the access to the port, as well as the great rail and transportation system here in Jacksonville, has made a tremendous difference for us and really allows us to stay competitive not only domestically but internationally as well.
And if you're just joining the program, we're speaking right now with Andrew East, Vice President at Alternate Energy Technologies down in Green Cove Springs, the largest U.S. manufacturer of solar thermal energy systems. We'll go back to your calls about this international trade agreement flap in Washington in a moment at 549-2937. But Andrew, as you were speaking about the port and logistics, here's a tweet from a listener. Will deepening our port make this region more competitive, and how will the Nicaragua Canal change the game? That's a good question because, of course, we've had a lot of attention focused on the widening of the Panama Canal and how that will help the import-export business in this area. What about this question, though?
No, absolutely. The dredging of the port and increasing the depth is going to make a huge difference in terms of Jacksonville's competitiveness, not only with other ports in Florida, but with other ports in the southeast. And the Nicaragua Canal is also going to allow multiple shipping lanes and access to new routes for logistics, thus lowering costs, because obviously as you raise competition and you provide alternative pathways for goods and services to move, it obviously is going to be able to lower the price of getting those goods and services through. So I think that both of those activities are going to lead to increased business regionally for Jacksonville, as well as a lower cost of transportation as we attempt to get our export goods from the U.S. into overseas markets.
549-2937, Charles in Riverside. Hey, Charles, good morning.
Good morning. One of the issues that I've typically had with trade packs like this is not only do we open ourselves up to moving our manufacturing base offshore, but with the rise of white-collar workers in places like the Philippines and India and in a lot of other English-speaking and Spanish-speaking countries throughout the world, we're really opening ourselves up to carving out our entire middle class. You know, jobs that even when you think that, you know, you've got a college degree, you're doing something that requires a lot of, you know, computer skill, they can move it over to India very easily. So, I mean, unless there are protections for all workers, really the only people who benefit from these are the executive class.
Thank you, Charles. And, of course, that's the argument against this, Andrew, that opening this up even further will just that globalization has pluses and minuses. Labor groups in this country will say the minus affects the American worker the most. What do you think about that argument?
I'd say that we're either an agent of change or we've become victims of change. And to ignore the globalization of the economy and the world economy is to ignore the fact that it is going to happen, and we can either participate and help to shape those rules, or we can allow the Chinese and the Russians, which are the two other dominant forces looking to provide free trade agreements to set the rules for the game. And I think that that has both national security implications as well as global economic implications, where we will gradually be less influential in those regions. So I think that there's a twofold answer. One is that we have to be participants in helping to shape the way that this global market is going to develop. And two, we also have to look at countries that have been able to maintain that domestic manufacturing, even entering into free trade agreements, and what type of systems they've been able to put in place to help ensure that that manufacturing stays on shore. And, you know, one of the things that I think is unfortunate in the U.S. is with public companies, you know, you're always chasing that quarterly dividend, that quarterly return, so those earning statements look good and you get a favorable rating. And so that sometimes leads to short-term planning and short-term thinking and not looking at long-term growth strategies. And I think that the movement of manufacturing overseas was a short-term strategy for increasing profitability. But in the long term, you know, if you're looking at a 10, 15, 25-year window, you're going to gradually start to see that manufacturing capacity move back to the U.S., where, again, I have to reiterate that we have the strongest, most qualified workforce in the world, and American companies and American companies' reputation for their brand and their goods are unsurpassed globally.
How many employees do you have, Andrew?
We're a small business. We have 68 employees and growing, but we're not a large multinational. We're not Boeing. We're not one of these companies that, typically benefit from these type of trade deals. We are a small manufacturer that has maintained our base and maintained our commitment to building the highest quality goods with American talent. So you
could potentially go from 68 employees to increasing your labor force, do you think, depending on how this legislation plays out?
Oh, absolutely. If we're able to access the Asian markets and the European markets more cost effectively, I would anticipate doubling of that workforce in 2 to 3 years.
And these are good. How well paying are your jobs?
We have very high paying manufacturing jobs from $15 to $25, $30 an hour in our manufacturing plants. So there are skilled labor, welding. We have a lot of high tech tank manufacturing as well. So we have a number of skilled positions that we employ for that we would be needing to expand out. We also own 10 acres right next door to our facility right now with plans for expansion as well as we can have the business to facilitate.
Let's go to Jack in St. Augustine. Hey, Jack, what are your thoughts? Jack, can't hear you at all.
Most of the talk has been about the economic impacts, and I was curious how these agreements address things like social justice and environmental protection in the overseas markets. Is there any stipulations there? And how does that differ from when, say, the Russians and the Chinese are the partners? Is there more social justice and environmental controls when there's an American agreement in place?
Thanks, Jack. That's a great question as well. Andrew East, your thoughts?
Yes. Well, for my conversations, those are absolutely paramount and forefront of these negotiations are labor rights, environmental concerns, making sure that worker protections are in place. And one of the things that I was very surprised to hear that they were considering was the digital media and the fact that in several of these countries and several nations now, they require you, if you're going to do internet sales in those countries, to maintain a physical presence on a server within that country. And so for small and medium-sized businesses, again, that's an extremely onerous expense that in many instances causes them not to be able to even have a digital market presence in those markets. So they were very comprehensive and overreaching in the areas that they were addressing, or at least that they said that they were addressing with these free trade agreements. But once again, the devil is always in the details. So once or if these agreements are ever agreed upon and released, then we'll be able to see the exact details. But from the conversations that I've had, they all seem to ensure that the social justice and the workers' rights issues were addressed.
And obviously, legislation is always well-intentioned when it comes to those concerns. But as we've seen in recent years, the supply chains can be vast and difficult to manage. Apple, in particular, has been hammered in the press for the conditions some of its workers, particularly in Asia, deal with. It can be a difficult thing to manage, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. But again, those markets are markets where we don't have existing free trade agreements or any type of trade agreement. So the protections that are afforded to those workers are all determined by their local governments. And so Apple in particular has, you're right, taken a tremendous beating because of the conditions that their workers operate in those markets. And that's one of the things that I think is important for the U.S. to be able to come into these markets and establish and help establish the guidelines and the rules so that those workers aren't subjected to those conditions.
Let's take a... Okay, sure. And let's take one more call. It's Bill in St. Augustine. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Melissa. One of the devilish details that bothers me is I understand that if someone in America invents a good product, that it can be opened up to litigation from a foreign competitor. That is just appalling that we would involve ourselves in anything where it would staunch invention, entrepreneurism in our own country due to some crazy caveat to this law where I can be sued because I invent the next new product.
Thanks, Bill. And so, Andrew, what are your final thoughts about this as the vote is scheduled in Ways and Means later today?
A rising tide will raise all ships. And so I feel that if we're able to create a larger market for U.S. companies to compete in, it's going to have the net effect of raising our GDP, creating hopefully a trade surplus instead of the imbalance that we currently enjoy, and hopefully bring the American manufacturing jobs back home. So I think that it's important to at least give the president the trade authority to bring a deal back to Congress that we can look at and evaluate, and hopefully be able to set the table and the standards for these agreements moving forward so that, again, our American ideals, free market principles, and employee protections are afforded in the markets and our trade partners.
Well, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And we were joined by Andrew East. He's the Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President at Alternate Energy Technologies in Green Cove Springs. They are the largest U.S. manufacturer of solar thermal energy systems. Much more still ahead. Later, a look at an interesting weekend event. Also, lymphedema awareness on the First Coast. But right now, here's how you can support us.
You can support us by giving us a call at 353-9528. Bill in Orange Park, call us. He loves Science Friday. Alice in Gainesville, call us. Or we love it when people from Gainesville call us because they have their own public radio station, but they picked ours.
Oh, yeah.
353-9528. Mm-hmm. And Alice loves All Things Considered. Bonnie called from St. Augustine, loves Diane Rehm. Mamie called from Jacksonville. I love them all. And Brian called from Jacksonville. He loves This American Life. And finally, Joe called from St. John's. And
Mamie loves them all?
Mamie.
Oh, Mamie. I'm just kidding.
Joe from St. John's loves Marketplace.
Yeah. Very just good. Thank you.
Some of the great
everyone.
Programs we have here.
Yeah.
And we want your call now at 353-9528.
No matter where you are. And yeah, some people do listen to a couple of public radio stations on their commute. And that's great that you remember them all during our times of pledge drives. And this is our spring pledge drive. We are looking at an $80,000 goal. We're at about 42 right now. Have a way yet, but we're waiting for your call because you are enjoying this program. And we know that you support something that is healthy for your brain and healthy for the community, healthy for other people that maybe can't afford to make a pledge of support. We're counting on you to pitch in and make a dollar amount pledge to the programming that you enjoy. We call it Fund Your Favorites here during this spring drive. Now, David and I have talked before about sustainers and how important they are. And again, that's where you make a monthly contribution that comes right out of now your checking account or your credit card. And because of sustainers, well, that has shortened our pledge drives to about 2.5 weeks now a year versus, I guess, we at one time had several weeks a year of pledge drives. And having worked in other stations, I know that's very typical. So thanks to that, and we hope that you will sign up as a sustainer. It's very important that we get a steady stream, a reliable stream of revenue that we can count on every month, and you can help with that. So thank you very much. And the number again, if you could call us now, is 353-9528. And what is this great? What is this great music?
That's okay. Here we go. Here's a little sample from Relax Radio. While you call us, here's a little musical interlude. Of course, that's Van Morrison with Moondance.
Is that it?
An alternate
okay.
version.
Yeah.
A nice jazzy version.
Oh, I like that. Hope people are dancing right to the phone.
To the
right
phone, exactly.
Yeah.
Get your credit card. Let your credit card be your partner. And now waltz over to the telephone. Yeah. Call us now. We're almost at $43,000. We got an $80,000 goal. Van the Man will get us there. If you like the music we play here after hours from 7 o'clock until 5 o'clock every morning, Monday through Friday. Classical music, blues, jazz, indie music, country music, string theory music, electro music. We have all the music you'd ever want and the music that you won't hear anywhere else. Call us right now and support the music on 89.9. Become a sustainer, or for a one-time gift of $120, we will give you an HD radio, and then you can listen to classical music 22 hours a day, our new Relax radio station with music like this 24 hours a day, and of course our number one station, 89.9. in CD quality. Whether it's talk and information or alternative music, we are your most available cultural resource.
That's right. Did you say 22 hours a day?
Yes, because we run Fresh Air at 7 and First Coast Connect at 8. So just two hours a day. We don't have classical while you're
I thought it was like the bars and they closed at 2 a.m. or something.
Well, that's what we do with Electro Lounge, because like any good club, we have to close sometimes, so we're not here Sundays.
Exactly.
353-9528. We are your public radio station. We can't be here without your support, so won't you take the time now to give us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. We challenge all the Van Morrison fans. He's been around since 1965 with Gloria.
Really? Wow.
He's still going strong with concerts. I saw him a few years ago. He's absolutely still brilliant.
Oh, good.
So love the music, love what we do here, then call us now at 353-9528.
Yeah, and we thank you very much. If you've already made your pledge of support this week, maybe you've had a chance to give it some thought and you'd like to up your pledge amount, that would be totally welcome. We can do that for you as well. So we've got people standing by, 353-WJCT, 353-9528.
Welcome back. Well, back in 1997, Candace Bridgewater of Orange Park was diagnosed with breast cancer. After a lumpectomy, removal of lymph nodes, and radiation treatments, Candace began to notice she had a swollen hand. She's been living for years now, ever since, with lymphedema, a condition most commonly caused by the removal of or damage to lymph nodes as a part of cancer treatment. Candace tried to turn the negative into a positive, and she has since become a national activist around the treatment and awareness of lymphedema, and there's a lot of news to share as Candace Bridgewater joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Lymph. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for
having me.
It's
on your mind.
It's on my mind.
And we'll go to your calls about this in a moment at 549-2937. So as I said, after your cancer treatment, you developed this, and so do millions of other Americans, right?
They do. The numbers are very hard to determine because there are many undiagnosed, unrecognized cases of lymphedema. So my goal this morning mainly is to let people know if they have a swelling in their arms or legs or anywhere in their body and they don't understand what it is and perhaps their doctor may not be able to give them a clear answer, to do some research. The National Lymphedema Network at lymphnet.org is the first place to go. They have a wealth of information, and the sooner lymphedema is diagnosed and treated, the better off every patient is.
Because it's a difficult condition to deal with.
It's a lifelong condition. It doesn't go away. It has to be treated carefully and professionally, and it's hard often to find that treatment. There's a website called Lymphology Associates of North America. That's where you would go to look for a treatment center. There are several in Jacksonville. Jacksonville Lymphedema Treatment Center is right here. There's one at Orange Park Medical Center, one at St. Vincent's, and at Mayo.
How are you treated with your lymphedema?
The treatment for everyone's lymphedema is a four-part series of manual lymphatic drainage, which is a very light, very special massage treatment that literally moves the extra flow of lymph fluid out of an arm or a leg and into the body for disposal. It's parallel to the circulatory system, and it is removing debris, things we don't want in our bodies. And if it doesn't go away, it builds up, becomes very thick and dense and big and can become inflamed and cause one to have infections and long-term hospitalization and disability.
Not what we want.
In the least.
So you not only have been successfully treated for lymphedema, you've become an activist. Tell us about what you've been able to accomplish.
Well, when I first noticed it, which was the day of my first radiation treatment, I knew what it was, but I had a hard time that long ago finding help in Jacksonville. But I persevered and actually took a physical therapist to Gainesville to a lymphedema treatment center there, and she decided to choose one of her therapists to learn lymphatic massage. And the after one gets lymphatic massage, it's really necessary and critical to have compression on that limb. And you see people out and about with sometimes the sports people are wearing compression these days. And you see that on somebody young, somebody elder, and they're not on a basketball court, you wonder why they have it. And that may well be compression for lymphedema. And the other parts of the treatment are personal exercise on your own, self-massage, being very careful not to have an injection or blood pressure on an arm or leg that has a swelling in it. So it's very self-contained. One has to take care and maintain.
You've also been successful in getting two pieces of legislation put forward, one in Congress and one in Tallahassee, right?
We're not anywhere in Tallahassee yet.
Not yet.
We are not. We're going to concentrate on the national bill right now. It's called the Lymphedema Treatment Act. I'm really pleased to say that Jacksonville Representative Corinne Brown and Ted Yoho have both re-co-sponsored that bill. We have several more Jacksonville representatives that we're waiting for them to co-sponsor, and then we need a whole lot more. There are 590 people around America who are on our advocacy team. They're all asking their representatives to co-sponsor this bill, and we hope to get that to the floor in Congress this year and then start working on our senators.
What would the National Lymphedema Act do?
That would do a tweak in the Medicare bill. Medicare bill does provide for 10 lymphedema massage treatments per year as long as, and this is a requirement, that treatment is followed by compression, because without the compression, it does no good. And we're trying to get the compression covered under Medicare, at which point other insurance companies would fit in under a Medicare rule and follow in case. And we have so many people in this country who can't afford compression. So they're not being treated, they don't know how to do it, and it's impossible to take care of it without compression. Essential.
This would give that care to so many. And this would be done through Medicare. There's no coverage for this under Obamacare.
There is not.
But is it your hope that if this becomes part of Medicare, eventually it could trickle to other forms of insurance?
Absolutely. Because this is not just for older people. I'm in that category. But children are born with lymphedema. Infants are born with lymphedema. There are three times in one's life when primary lymphedema, which is separate from surgery and radiation, can develop, and that's at birth. It's a genetic flaw very often in the teen years, mostly for girls, and around the 30s, a limb, in this case it's usually leg lymphedema, just begins to swell and you can't imagine why. And it can have terrible consequences.
Well, I hope you are successful. And it's tough to be an activist while sick, or dealing with something
like this. I'm not sick.
You're not sick.
I have a problem.
But while dealing with this, my kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you very
yes.
much.
And good luck. Keep us posted.
I surely will. Thank you, Melissa.
She's Candace Bridgewater of Orange Park. Again, that pending legislation, if it is successful, would be called the National Lymphedema Treatment Act. And we're back in a moment.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
The Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, April is National Poetry Month, and there's a special show at Cork Studios this weekend in Riverside to celebrate the art of poetry, in particular, haiku. This event will feature luminaries in the local cultural scene, including our own Al Letson, as each local star reads a haiku. It will then be screen printed, signed, stamped, and numbered for a limited edition run. Here with a preview of Haiku's Well Hung, we welcome curator Keith Marks and fine art screen printer George Cornwell. Guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. Keith, this is an interesting exhibit. How did this all come about?
A couple years ago, I write, I dabble, I play music, I do lots of different things. And I had written a haiku and I forgot about it. And about 6 months ago, I found it and it made me laugh. And kind of the wheels started turning. And you know, nobody wants to read a book of my haikus and, you know, doing presentations. And I went to a show at Cork and I said, man, it would be interesting to see poetry and language as featured as a fine art. And so I had a conversation with George. I said, George, this is the idea. And George said, I love it. Let's do it. And we got the ball rolling.
George, you are a Cork artist, but you're going to be putting your talents to use for this event. Tell us what we'll be able to see.
Well, we'll be doing some limited edition prints that are going to be available for sale to the public. And I'm going to be able to show off a good bit of my craftsmanship at the show itself.
Very nice. And there's so much talent on display at Cork. People should go over there no matter what, just to see what's happening. This is just one more example of that.
Yeah, there's a lot happening at Cork. It's really become quite the place, the nexus of Jacksonville's art and culture scene. And there's a wide array of different types of artists that are there. And it's certainly a place where if you haven't been, you should check it out.
Now, we need to give some props right now to our digital content editor, Ray Hollister. He wrote an article about this on our website, and there's also a slideshow of images if you go to wjctnews.org. Ray wrote the article in the form of a haiku.
The whole article.
The whole article is a haiku.
Yeah.
You want to read the whole thing?
You can read it.
You want me
like
to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. What is a haiku? It's a Japanese poem with 17 beats. The first verse has 5, the second verse gets 7, and the third has 5. At first, the poems described nature and beauty with vivid language. Many poets still communicate artistry. Others just make beats. At Cork, they will hang haikus from Artisan Jack's screen printed on white. It's a very simple piece of poetry, host Keith Mark said. The aesthetic of the show is clean and simple, intimate with words. We tried to carry haiku's simplicity to the show's aesthetic. Saturday at 6, 20 artist poems will be shown at Cork West.
Wow, Ray, that should be a Pulitzer.
You just made Ray's day. Everybody go to WJCTnews.org and check out the haiku and the slideshow about haiku's Well Hung, as you're calling it. And who else is going to be reading their poems besides our own star, Al Letson?
So nobody's actually reading the poems.
Oh, they're not?
No,
okay.
They're going to be screen printed and on display. It's as if you were going to an art show. So all of these people, Steve Williams, Larry Wilson, Jim Draper, Sean Thurston, all these people have contributed haikus to the show, and George is screen printing them. And the design of the haiku and the poster and a lot of the material, like the program, is designed by Kedgar Volta. So it really is a who's who of, you know, Jacksonville cultural's creatives.
Georgia, how many are you screen printing? How many will be available?
We're going to do 18 of all the artists, and the bundles are going to come approximately 15 are available for sale.
So a nice way to pick up and support our local artistic community.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, going to be a great event. What else do people need to know?
It's happening this Saturday at Cork West, which is on the corner of Roselle and King Street in Riverside. The show goes from 6 to 10-ish until, you know, until we kind of wind down. So people should come and, you know, we'll have, you know, food and drinks and lots of haikus for people to read and experience, and it'll be a good conversation. I mean, the goal is really to spark a conversation, you know, less about haiku. Haiku is the driver, but we're looking to create the vehicle to talk about language and how we express language and how language interacts with the world we live in, and, you know, how just basically how language can be much more than just words on a page.
It sounds wonderful, and I so appreciate you giving us this preview. Have a great evening.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
Again, that's Haikus Well Hung at Cork in Riverside Arts District. That is Saturday night. We were joined by curator Keith Marks and fine art screen printer and Cork artist George Cornwell. Get out and enjoy that. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. This show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. If you have feedback about a segment you heard, just send us an email, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They're now up on iTunes. Next on the Diane Rehm Show, Verizon has unveiled a new cable TV package that lets customers choose the channels they want. We explore consumer demand for choice, high-speed internet availability, and the shakeup in cable TV. That conversation's coming up at 10. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. Make sure to tune in tomorrow at 9 for our Friday Media Roundtable, but right now, you need to give us a call and fund your favorites. Here's how.
You can call us at 353-9528 and push us up to the $45,000 mark. 10 callers right now would help get us there. And if you work for AT&T, Citigroup, Coach, CSX, PGA Tour or Merrill Lynch and a good deal of other companies in town, they will match your donation. So check with your human resources department where you work and see if you don't work for a company that will match whatever you give, which would really help us out. Fund your favorite. Pick your favorite show. If it's First Coast Connect, then call us right now, 353-9528. We won't put you on the air like Melissa does, but we will certainly take down your vital information and let you invest in this, your program.
Hi, Michelle Corum here with David Luckin to appeal to you out there listening to the First Coast Connect program and to WJCT in general to make a pledge of support as we ask for $80,000 to help us pay the bills for the programming that you listen to on a regular basis. Well, toward that $80,000, we're at $42,000 and some change, but we still need your help because this all wraps up tomorrow. Tomorrow, folks. So if you've been delaying or procrastinating, don't do that anymore. Go to the phone. You'll feel great about what you've done. You're also supporting the community when you make a pledge of support to this station. And we're talking the television and the radio station here at WJCT. We do a lot of stuff in the community as a public broadcaster. Speaking of women's health, this is one of the programs we put on, Teach Conference.
I think we had a lunch and learn yesterday. The parking lot was full, and there were doctors in the house giving people
That's
advice.
That's always good.
I asked him to take a look at this. No. 353-9528. Anytime you see a doctor, you should be happy because they're good folks, and they support us. But, Michelle, you know who's really helping this whole operation is our sustainers. They have changed the whole model. They've knocked us down from 5.5 weeks of pledging to just 2.5. We used to have goals of $140,000 every time. Now we're down to 80.
That's great.
And we want to thank people like Barbara Blonder and Nancy Felton and Jerry Crone and Katrina Lee and Angie Lieb, Joyce Duarte, Justin Lockley, Bob Dowdy, Judy Adams, just a few of the people that are making all of this programming possible and making it easier for us to do the pledges because they are in the system straight away. They've invested in this station and they've made it easier for us because we don't have to be here as often and we don't have to ask for as much.
Yeah,
so we thank our sustainers.
Thank you
folks
much.
Have really changed the model and you're making it all possible. Program like Morning Edition, Michelle, I didn't realize They're paying you $116,000. Yeah. You're doing great. Wow. No, that's what we pay the network for that program. Uh-huh. And that's a lot of money. And mm-hmm. there's no way we can't pay them or we won't have the show. Even a program like Marketplace, $25,000, all things considered, $65,000.
Yeah, no chump change there.
Hey, that's, wait. Don't tell me. How much for wait?
I have no
$17,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's why we come to you. Mm-hmm. We try and keep it friendly and nice, but the serious side of it is
it does cost.
It's a lot of money.
It's not free. Right?
No, you get what you pay for, though. Mm-hmm. You get really good quality programming here. Won't you take the time right now? If you've never done it before, we want that 80% of listeners who listen and don't support us to start calling us up at 353-9528.
And I was mentioning some of the things that we do for the community, and I'd like to put in a plug here for the Radio Reading Service.
Another great service. How many years?
23 years, just about.
Reading the newspaper to folks who
are low vision or blind or physically challenged. And that all comes from the contributions that you give to WJCT.
Right down to the comics, right?
Right, yeah. They read the comics, and it's on every morning. It's also heavily staffed by volunteers.
You know, they did that during the Depression. There was a newspaper strike in New York, and they read the comics on the radio.
Oh, was that, maybe that was
back
the first
in the 30s.
Time? Yeah. Yep. So these folks know all the comic characters. They're great at their jobs. They're very enthusiastic. But that whole service wouldn't be here if WJCT hadn't decided to keep it when the state X'd out their funding for the Radio Reading Service. So thank you to WJCT. Thank you to anyone out there who would like to give to that program. Just put that on the check, Radio Reading Service, and those funds will go directly to that part of WJCT's
and all of our Ready to Learn television programming for children.
Yes.
So that when you watch Channel 7 in the morning with your kids, they are watching programming that doesn't sell vitamins. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Or any products like that. It's actually language and grammar and manners and all the right things you want to teach your kids. So mm-hmm. the first day they go to pre-K or first grade or kindergarten, they are prepared.
Yeah,
and
it's a
our
great
programming
primer.
Is all Ready to Learn programming.
Yeah,
it's there for a reason. Educational, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. And our TV side's been on the air for over 50 years. Radio here has been on for
40?
Over 40.
Yeah.
So we are a major part of the fabric of this community and society as a whole in bringing intelligent programming to the masses.
Right.
So give us a call. Show your support. We can't do it without the money. And we come to you three times a year and ask you for a little help that way. So call us now at 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Just look for the support button. And that's an easy way to do it. If it's too early to talk to anyone, if you haven't had your coffee yet, you can go online. If you just got to work and you were listening to us on your way in, you can just log into wjct.org and show us your support right there.
Yeah, if you spend a lot of time with WJCT during your day or night when you're enjoying the music, or you really count on those NPR news segments at the top of every hour, you know that you're getting a lot out of it, and now's the time to put something back into it. So that's why we're asking for your financial support. We don't do this because we do it because we have to. And it is fun, too, to talk directly to listeners. So, but it's not your favorite thing to listen to all the time. That's why we try to keep it short.
And we like to do our real jobs. We like to create good radio programming.
Create.
But good news coverage, an award-winning news department, extraordinary music all the time. 353-9528, and we thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.